No one escapes their past. No one escapes judgment.
You think he's not up there? You think he's not watching over this country? How else can you explain it? He tested us, but we came through. We did what we had to do. Islington, Enfield. I was there, I saw it all. Immigrants, Muslims, homosexuals, terrorists, disease-ridden degenerates. They had to go. Strength through unity. Unity through faith. I'm a God-fearing Englishman, and I'm goddamn proud of it.
That's quite enough of that, thank you very much.
A yellow-coded curfew is now in effect. Any unauthorized personnel will be subject to arrest. This is for your protection. A yellow-coded curfew is now in effect. Any unauthorized personnel will be subject to arrest. This is for your protection.
Mr. Dascombe, what we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country. This message must be read in every newspaper, heard on every radio, seen on every television. This message must resound throughout the entire interlink. I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
Good evening, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 12th of August 2011. We led the show in there with a montage from the very dark and satirical film from the Wachowski brothers called V for Vendetta, which seems to somehow almost summarise the situation in the UK right now, and I found it quite interesting just reflecting on that, because quite often art reflects life, and sometimes life reflects art, and I want to talk a little bit more of that during the show, and I want to actually play to you the address from David Cameron's Prime Minister David Cameron's statement to the House of Commons yesterday, which actually sparked, which actually reminded me of some themes from that movie. What do you think about that, Josh? Welcome to the show, Josh. What do you think about that analogy I just drew there?
Oh, look, it's like someone is literally, using V for Vendetta as an instruction manual. We've got our T-shirts, 1984 isn't an instruction manual, which refers to George Orwell. But, it really goes towards this V for Vendetta film as well. It really is amazing. We're sort of sparking these things, and now they want to hone down on social media. So we've got to crush social media, and we've got to bring in the army and all this stuff. And look, you know, really, I read a good piece the other night about a guy, an Australian guy that owns a pub in one of these places in England, which is getting rioted, going through massive riots, and he was just absolutely frightened out of his pants. He was defending his business, which was a small little pub, with his family, with like a machete, and he could hear the neighbors all getting smashed in, and just guys really running amok, and he said, where the hell is the army? I want the army, because he really, and coming from that side, I could imagine, really, if I was a business owner, I'd be wanting the army too, I'd be absolutely desperate.
Well, that's what happens when the underclass rises up and starts, basically snatching from the middle classes. Then the middle classes demand the government, which is like the superstructure, to clamp down and defend them. But what they always forget, and what always has happened again and again through history, is when that occurs, guess who also gets clamped down on? The middle classes get clamped down on. And that's what's going to happen. It's already been happening. It's been, we've been talking about it. People in the truth movement have been talking about it ever since they started bringing in the draconian measures after September 11, the surveillance systems, the increased police powers, the stop and search capabilities. And now, unfortunately, with these riots, everyone is going to say, well, that was totally justified. And they're going to say, not only that, we need more powers now. And that is exactly what David Cameron, the Conservative Prime Minister, is now saying. We need more powers. The police have to have more powers. He's actually calling for the police to have powers to disperse public gatherings. He's calling for a curfew.
This is really like a lot of things in our modern society. It's like if you look at the medical system in modern society, the medical Western system is treat the symptom, and that's about it. Treat the symptom. So if you've got the headache, don't worry about drinking water. Let's just numb the pain. Let's deal with the symptom. Let's numb the pain. Instead of dealing with your depression, let's numb the depression. Let's numb you just down. So what we're seeing here is another, let's deal with a symptom, or rioting is a symptom of a sick society. Instead of saying, hey, what is wrong with our society right now? Why are youth ready just to, bash people for fun, smash windows for fun, steal and thieve of each other, kill and murder and stab each other for fun, and destroy their small communities for fun? What's going on there? Oh, okay, well, let's deal with the symptom. Let's just get more draconian. Let's clamp down on social media. Let's clamp down on the freedom and the anarchic nature of the internet. Let's clamp down on youth. Let's stick more of them in prison.
Exactly. I mean, basically, the approach is to just blame the people, to blame the parents who haven't taken care of their kids, to blame the people who are bad. I mean, this is actually the mentality that we're getting now, and it's almost a sort of a medieval kind of way of thinking. They're bad. It's like, oh, what do they have, the devil in them? I mean, what do you mean? And this is what he's saying. They're just bad people. I mean, this is the discourse now. This is the level of discourse. This is a level of primitive, childlike, ridiculous way of looking at the world. And of course, the reality is the government has been bad. The government, and that's an anonymous word for an institution which is a collection of individuals working under some kind of system. But the government has been very, very bad for a very long time. They've been engaging in unprovoked wars against sovereign nations that have killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people. They have raped and pillaged the economy hand in hand with bankers. They have created a broken society. They've created that. The government created it, okay? And now the government's saying these people in this underclass are just bad.
Yeah, that's right. And one thing that sort of we alluded to in the last show, but it came out now that Colonel Gaddafi and I think also, don't quote me on this, but Iran also came out and said, oh, David Cameron has to stand down. He's not leading the people. He's an incompetent leader, and he must stand down.
Indeed, I've got an article here from The Telegraph. Gaddafi calls on David Cameron to step down over rioting. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi has used the riots as a pretext for a bizarre call on David Cameron, not that bizarre really, to step down.
A bizarre call. Like, it's not bizarre when the West does it.
No, it's not bizarre at all. The Libyan leader, at war with rebels and a British-led NATO campaign, attempted to turn the tables on Mr. Cameron. Well, indeed, Cameron and his government must leave after the popular uprising against them and the violent repression of peaceful demonstrations by police. Well, look, it's satirical. I think that Gaddafi is probably being deliberately satirical. And because he knows what's going on, and he knows what's going on in his country. And as we said in the last show,
he's an absolute creep as well. I'm not standing up for the guy. I mean, he's a disgusting man as well. But
look, I'm not going to go that far to say that Gaddafi is disgusting, because I tell you, I do agree he's a dictator. I do not agree with dictators, but in as far as benevolent dictatorship goes, he is actually closer to that than most others, in that he has created, with all the wealth of Libya's oil system, of Libya's oil reserves, a lot of that has gone back to the people. This is very different. Libya is very different to a lot of other puppet dictatorships. That's why it's being crushed. The reason why it's being crushed is because he is not as wicked as he ought to be. And what I really mean in saying that is that he is not being a total puppet of the West as he's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
He's actually trying to be a great leader. And in doing so, he's transferred quite a lot of the wealth to the people. That's what they never wanted. And in fact, Saddam Hussein did that to a degree as well, and that's why he had to be eliminated. But they do build these people up. The West has been building these people up, and that's how you control societies, folks. It's very simple. You build up a puppet leader, and you give that puppet leader puppet powers that can be taken away, and that person then becomes your instrument.
Yeah, yeah, puppet powers, strings.
Exactly. So, look, the situation in the UK is very, very serious, and that's why I'm doing another show tonight. Wasn't planning to do it. I want to get into discussing it. I want us to consider and reflect what is going on and what this means potentially for the future for Australia, because Australia could easily end up going down this path too. There is a massive underclass of people here. There are forces at work that could be activated. And
yeah, well, you saw it in the Aboriginal communities in the Redfern riots. It was very fast. You saw it in the southern beaches when we had the riots down there. Things, sparks just happen, and information flies at such a speed now that it can happen before anyone can take any control of it. And this is why I'm talking about symptoms of a sick society.
Yes, and your analogy about the way we treat those symptoms, similar to the way we treat medical issues, is absolutely spot on, Josh. There is a mentality that the things we don't like just have to be destroyed. We apply chemotherapy to cancer. We try to suppress symptoms of unhappiness, of dis-ease, meaning disease. So, break coming up, then we're going to get right into that, and we're going to play some of the audio from David Cameron's address to British Parliament. Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to the show. Okay, I want to move straight into some audio from David Cameron's address to Parliament yesterday. And Josh, feel free to tell me to stop if you want to comment on any points that are being made. It's actually quite a long speech, so we'll probably only have a chance to play a small part of it. But it's quite indicative of where things are headed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With permission, I would like to make a statement. First of all, let me thank you, Mr. Speaker, and honourable and right honourable members for returning. When there are important events in our country, it is right that Parliament is recalled and that we show a united front. I'm grateful to the Leader of the Opposition for the constructive approach that he's taken over the past few days. I've tried to speak with many of the members whose constituencies have been affected, and I'd like to pay particular tribute to the member for Tottenham for his powerful words and actions over recent days. What we have seen on the streets of London and in other cities across our country is completely unacceptable, and I'm sure the whole House will join me in condemning it. Keeping people safe is the first duty of government. The whole country has been shocked by the most appalling scenes of people looting, violence, vandalising and thieving. It is criminality, pure and simple, and there is absolutely no excuse for it. We have seen houses, offices and shops.
Go ahead.
See, all true stuff, right? So
it is criminality, pure and simple. Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it is unacceptable behaviour. It's in a nice society, you wouldn't want this ever. In a good society, it prevents theft and destruction of personal property.
But we have testimony. Testimony from Paul Watson at InfoWars, who said that the police stood down for 3 days. Now, this is not confirmed. I'm just saying we've got validated testimony that this actually, that there was some kind of a stand down. But please continue.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know, you prime the speech with something that everyone can agree on.
Yeah.
And, I'm just sort of saying, you know, that's you get everyone on your side first by, you know, how to... I mean, no one would say no to that, right?
No, it's terrible. Look at it. Oh, my God. You know, buildings on fire. You know, people stealing. It's just, yeah, it's terrible. It's unforgivable.
Well, it absolutely is. Yeah. And people are really suffering in this. I mean, there's people that are really innocent people who are getting beat up. Shops who are totally innocent. They're just trying to have a business, trying to get along.
Yeah.
Trying to get through life and, and probably doing it tough as well. And then this happens. But who's to blame? I wonder who he blames.
Indeed. Well, let's see, yeah.
Cops raided and torched, police officers assaulted and fire crews attacked as they try to put out fires. We've seen people robbing others while they lie injured and bleeding in the street, and even three innocent people being deliberately run over and killed in Birmingham. Mr. Speaker, we will not put up with this in our country. We will not allow a culture of fear to exist on our streets, and we will do whatever it takes to restore law and order and to rebuild our communities. First, we must be clear about the sequence of events. A week ago today, a 29-year-old man named Mark Duggan was shot dead by the police in Tottenham. Clearly, there are questions that must be answered, and I can assure the House that this is being investigated thoroughly and independently by the IPCC. We must get to the bottom of exactly what happened, and we will. Mr. Speaker, initially there were some peaceful demonstrations following Mark Duggan's death, and understandably and quite appropriately, the police were cautious about how they dealt with this. However, this was then used as an excuse by opportunist thugs in gangs, first in Tottenham itself, then across London, and then in other cities. And it is completely wrong to say there is any justifiable causal link. It is simply preposterous for anyone to suggest that people looting in Tottenham at the weekend, still less 3 days later in Salford, were in any way doing so because of the death of Mark Duggan. The young people stealing flat-screen televisions and burning shops, that was not about politics or protest, it was about theft. Mr. Speaker, in recent days, individual police officers have shown incredible bravery and have worked in some cases around the clock without a break, and they deserve our support and our thanks. But what became increasingly clear earlier this week was that there were simply far too few police deployed onto our streets, and the tactics they were using weren't working. Police chiefs have been frank with me about why this happened. Initially, the police treated the situation too much as a public order issue rather than essentially one of crime. The truth is that the police have been facing a new and unique challenge, with different people doing the same thing, basically looting, in different places, but all at the same time. Mr. Speaker, to respond to this situation, we are acting decisively to restore order on our streets, to support the victims of this terrible violence, and to look at the deeper problems that have led to such a hardcore of young people to decide to carry out such appalling criminality.
Now, I'd just like to say, up to this point in his speech, I'm actually agreeing pretty much with the thrust of what he's saying. And then when he says we need to look at the deeper problems, I'm going, yeah, great. And that's what I was hoping, that we're going to look at the deeper problems. Look at the rape of the economy. Look at the austerity measures. Look at the way people have lost faith in government, because look at the way government's been behaving. I mean, yeah, let's look at the deeper problems. But he's about to get into the what he calls the deeper problems now. Just bear with me. I'll keep it rolling.
Let me take each in turn. First, restoring order. Following the meetings of COBRA, which I chaired on Tuesday and Wednesday and again this morning, we've taken decisive action to help ensure more robust and more effective policing. Because of decisions made by Metropolitan Police Commissioner Tim Godwin and other police chiefs up and down the country, there are now more police on the streets, more people being arrested, and more criminals being prosecuted. The Metropolitan Police increased the number deployed on the streets of London.
Sure, go.
No, just brilliant. More police, more people being arrested. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a rather pathetic kind of statement in itself. Yeah, yeah. Agreed. Objection sustained.
From 6,000 to almost 16,000 officers, and this number will remain throughout the weekend. We've also seen large increases in deployments of officers in other affected areas. Leave in affected forces has been cancelled. Police officers have been bussed from forces across the country to areas of greatest need. And many businesses have also, quite rightly, released...
Sorry?
You know, this comes to the question, who watches the watchers? Where do these police all of a sudden come from? Where do they all of a sudden get millions of new police from that are just like angels?
Well, indeed,
you know,
that
never do anything wrong, are absolutely perfect. You know, at the end of the day, police are people too. And, you know, I always find it funny when they go on about how, you know, oh, we've had to increase the policing by, like, you know, tenfold. And you're thinking, well, where did they come from?
Yeah, where do they pull these policemen out of, indeed?
Yeah, and how long have they been trained? And what's their background? And where, you know?
Yeah.
And when I say where did they come from, I mean, what's their background? Who are these people that have all of a sudden got guns and are the violent enforcement arm of the law?
Well, indeed. And later on, he starts talking about the army. There's talk about getting the army out. So it doesn't end there, that's for sure.
Special constables to help, and they performed magnificently as well. More than 1,200 people have now been arrested across the country. We are making technology work for us by capturing the images of the perpetrators on CCTV, so even if they haven't been yet arrested, their faces are known and they will not escape the law. And as I said yesterday, no phony human rights concerns about publishing these photographs will get in the way of bringing these criminals to justice.
Okay, that's the first really chilling thing. No phony human rights concerns. This is where it's headed, folks. This is where we're going. You know, fasten your seatbelts, because it's going to get really bad from here on.
Anyone charged with violent disorder and other serious offences should expect to be remanded in custody, not let back on the streets. And anyone convicted should expect to go to jail. Courts in London, Manchester and the West Midlands have been sitting through the night and will do so for as long as is necessary. Magistrates' courts have proved effective in ensuring swift justice. The Crown Courts are now starting to deal with the most serious cases. We are keeping under constant review whether the courts have the necessary sentencing powers that they need, and we will act if necessary. As a result of the robust and uncompromising measures that have been taken, good progress is being made in restoring order to the streets of London and other cities around our country. As I've made clear, nothing should be off the table, every contingency should be looked at. The police are already authorised to use baton rounds, and as I said yesterday, while they would not be appropriate now, we do have in place contingency plans for water cannon to be available at 24 hours' notice. Some people have raised the issue of the army. The acting commissioner of the Metropolitan Police said to me that he would rather be the last man left in Scotland Yard with all his management team out on the streets before he asked for army support.
Just leave it there. We're just going to break. We'll continue this after the break. I've got a song by The Clash, London Calling, coming shortly. Welcome back to the show. That was a classic song there from the 80s. Sometimes I think that the things that are going on there in the UK, it's like a cross between a bad zombie movie and the movie we were talking about earlier, V for Vendetta, and you know, something out of George Orwell. It's just a grotesque unfolding paradigm that we're seeing. And in some ways, I think that what we're also seeing a new type of social manipulation, because I actually think that in some ways that the false flag terrorism, which has been used to ramp up government power and keep everyone afraid, I think a lot of people have started to see through that. And I think that some of the social engineers have come up with some new ideas. They're not that new, but it's kind of a new twist on an old theme. Of course, it's hard to prove any of this. It's more of a gut feeling. But, you know, that's what we do on this show, is we give you our gut feelings and we say, look, you know, let's research it. You know, we're not telling you the truth. We're looking into things and we're talking about it. And at this point, I'd just like to welcome to the show Chris Toland, a.k.a. Crispy T, who's a well-known radio personality in Sydney on Radio 2SR Skid Row Workers Radio.
Yeah, how are you going today?
Welcome to Truth News. It's been a while since we've had you on.
Yeah, it's been a while. Thanks for having me again. It's good to be back. I've been doing less of the radio at the Radio Skid Row, but it's still running Monday to Thursday, 6 to 9, talking a whole lot of various things, especially truth-seeking and truth-telling as best as we can. People call it conspiranoia, but I think we present good information mixed with a bit of other things that I'm not really on board with, such as, you know, UFOs or whatever the other guys want to talk about. But yeah.
Did you say conspiranoia? Isn't that a Charlie Veitch term?
Oh, maybe it is. I haven't latched up to any of his stuff.
Yeah, we did a whole show on Charlie Veitch a few weeks ago, but we won't go back down that path. But yeah, conspiranoia. Well, look, Crispy, I mean, can I just get your what's your gut feeling about what's going on in the UK right now? I mean, look, you don't have to prove it. Like, just what do you think's going on?
Well, I think it's a classic case of problem reacting solution and social engineering, societal manipulation and engineering. What I see is that the police tactic of a stand down for a number of days, and also other things prior to that, such as shutting down of student youth centres and youth areas, where in Tottenham there were... I think I'm talking over you. Did you just ask me another question?
No, continue, you're fine.
It's sort of breaking in and out a little bit. But the 13 youth centres were shut down in the Tottenham area, and I saw a posted on your Facebook page, these kids saying, there's nothing to do anymore. Why do they shut the youth centre down? We were going there every night and now it's shut down. Why do they do that? And this is in July. And,
that is interesting. And
one guy said, yeah, there's going to be riots. You know, the kids got nothing to do. And hey, there are riots. And
of course, a man was shot dead in the street. I mean, that was the flashpoint. And there's a lot of questions about that killing as well. But indeed.
That is the flashpoint. And I think that the social engineers, I mean, I think I can use these words on your show. I wouldn't use it if I was on Channel 7. Like,
sure.
I think your show has got, I think, a good listenership that understand these sort of terms. But there are plans and there are contingencies and ideas to... we can see from the solution, you know, you can see what their plans have been through the solution. And David Cameron just speaking in front of Parliament saying that he's going to bring in a curfew possibly and more police on the street, more harder measures. Everyone's going to pay for what they've done. But the thing is, the police let it go on. Was it 2 or 3 days or... They were just observing. I mean, what's going on?
He tries to explain it. We've actually played the first part of the speech there from the House of Commons, and he tries to justify that by saying the police didn't know what to do almost. I mean, was that, Josh, the thrust of what he said? I mean, it's like he said, well, the police had these things going on at the same time and they couldn't respond or something like that.
It's always the same thing.
Go ahead, Josh.
It was the same thing with Martin Bryan. It was the same thing with this guy in Denmark. The same thing with Reisner. It always seems that these big events, that the police just can't make it for 3 hours, 3 days, a day, long periods of time. And all of a sudden you're getting these...
Look, what I can assure you, what I can absolutely assure you is if these people had been armed, right, and if they were attacking number 10 Downing Street or going somewhere near Buckingham Palace, I guarantee you there would have been a very quick response, right? But they were just burning down people's businesses. They were just burning down pubs and, you know, and attacking people on the street. No need to respond to that. Because it wasn't really threatening to the power elites, and how convenient that they weren't armed, and yet it looks so horrific what they've done that we can now bring in a totalitarian, you know, over the top police state. How convenient, because really we've wanted that all along. But look. Let me just continue the audio from the House of Commons. We don't have that much time in the show to actually talk about all this, so I'm going to just continue with the audio. But, Crispy, feel free to stop it if you want to make a comment.
That is the right attitude and one I share. But it is the government's responsibility to make sure that every future contingency is looked at, including whether there are tasks that the army could undertake that might free up more police for the front line. Mr. Speaker, everyone watching these horrific actions will be struck by how they were organised via social media. Free flow of information can be used for good, but it can also be used for ill. So we are working with the police, the intelligence services and industry to look at whether it would be right to stop people communicating via these websites and services when we know they are plotting violence, disorder and criminality. I've also asked the police if they need any other new powers. Specifically on face masks, currently they can only ask for these to be removed in a specific geographical location and for a limited time. So I can announce today that we are going to give the police the discretion to require the removal of face coverings under any circumstances where there is reasonable suspicion that they are related to criminal activity. Yeah. And on dealing with crowds, we are looking also at the use of the existing dispersal powers and whether any wider power of curfew is necessary. Mr. Speaker, whenever the police face a new threat, they must have the freedom and the confidence to change tactics as necessary. This government will always make sure they have the backing and political support to do so. The fight back has well and truly begun, but there will be no complacency, and we will not stop until this mindless violence and thuggery is defeated and law and order is fully restored on all of our streets.
Just quickly summarise, he's basically saying we're going to bring in draconian censorship and the freedom of assembly is also going to be challenged, and we're going to look at whatever other powers we can give the police to basically do what they want, or as they say, do what they need to do to protect us. So
they're fighting the symptom, which is, you know, thuggery and robbery, instead of the cause.
Well, I mean, they already have a lot of laws too, Josh. I mean, they've already got a massive arsenal of laws through the anti-terrorism acts that have been passed over the last few years. They can already stop and search people at random. And guess what? They're already doing that. That's part of why that's another flashpoint for the riot, is the way the police have just been, you know, they just slam people up against walls and search them. They actually do this all the time now.
Mm. Yeah, well, can I just chuck my 2 cents?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gift for a tyrant, this sort of thing. A tyrant loves this stuff. They can go to town. And like he said, now, most importantly, we need the backing and the political support. And he's got it, you know, unilaterally on both sides, you know. And this is an absolute gift. And
so there is no dissent. There is no dissent in Parliament at all. It's all, and you can see it, you can watch the video, they're all nodding and they're all agreeing. Both sides of Parliament, there's no dissent.
That's right. You hear this big cheer. Mm. We can all take off the face mask. Yeah. You know, it really is straight out of V for Vendetta.
It is.
Amazing.
It's almost satirical. It's quite the character of David Cameron actually looks almost like a double of the character in the film too. The character who plays the puppet prime minister in the film looks like this guy and talks like him as well. That's why I played a bit of it from the beginning. But anyway, I'll just continue.
Let me turn to the innocent victims. No one will forget the images of the woman jumping from a burning building, or the furniture shop that had survived the Blitz but now has been tragically burnt to the ground. And everyone would have been impressed by the incredibly brave words of Tariq Jahan, a father in Birmingham, whose son was so brutally and tragically run over and killed. Shops, businesses, homes, too many have been vandalised or destroyed, and I give the people affected this promise. We will help you repair the damage, get your businesses back up and running, and support your communities. Let me take each in turn. On repairing the damages, I can confirm that any individual, homeowner or business that has suffered damage to or loss of their buildings or property as a result of rioting can seek compensation under the Riot Damages Act, even if uninsured. The government will ensure the police have the funds they need to meet the cost of...
Yeah, continue.
So this is a perfect example of getting the people on side to pass through measurements, because these sort of, you know, free money, so you give free money out for anyone that's had any problems, but along with these measurements, if you go along with these measurements, you also get all the draconian measures that we're about to pass through.
Oh, yeah.
So do you want it or do you not?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of bait, really. This is bait to the middle classes. Remember, this is all about crushing the middle classes from below and from above. But to get a fish on a hook, you've got to provide a bit of bait. And, handouts are a bit of bait. And, of course, there's been a lot of handouts we've seen since the 2008 financial collapse. and more coming. Going to break. We'll be right back.
Deception, spin, and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Welcome back to the show. We're just going through the audio from David Cameron's statement to the House of Commons, and I'm here with Crispy T from Radio 2S RSR and a few other well-known Sydney, you know, haunts, and Josh, of course, joining us tonight as well. I want to continue with the audio because we're just about to get into the juiciest part of it, of all,
the nitty-gritty,
where he starts to lay the blame, and I just find this really, really, really indicative of what it's all about. So we'll just kick it off.
Any legitimate claims, and whereas normally claims must be received within 14 days, we'll extend the period to 42 days. The Association of British Insurers have said they expect the industry to be paying out in excess of £200 million, and they have assured us that claims will be dealt with as quickly and constructively as possible. On supporting business, we are today setting up a new £20 million high street support scheme to help affected businesses get back up and running quickly. And to minimise the costs facing businesses, the government will enable local authorities to grant business rate relief by funding at least three quarters of their costs. We will defer tax payments for businesses in greatest need through time to pay and other practical support. And for houses and businesses that have been most badly damaged, we have instructed the Valuation Office to immediately stop liability for council tax and business rates. A specific point was raised with me in Wolverhampton yesterday, that planning regulations make it difficult for shops to put up protective shutters. We will weed out unnecessary planning regulations to ensure that businesses can get back on their feet and feel secure on our high streets as soon as possible. On supporting local communities, I can confirm that the Belwin scheme to support local authorities will be operational. However, to ensure urgent funding is immediately available, we are today establishing a new £10 million recovery scheme to provide additional support to councils in making areas safe, clean and clear again. And the government will also meet the immediate costs of emergency accommodation for families made homeless by these disturbances. The Secretaries of State for Communities, Local Government and for Business have made available to the House details of all these schemes today. Of course, this situation continues to evolve and we will keep any additional support under close review. Finally, Mr. Speaker, let me turn to the deeper problems. Responsibility for crime always lies with the criminal. Yeah. These people were all volunteers. They didn't have to do what they did, and they must suffer the consequences.
Now, just listen to this language. It starts to get into hyperbole after hyperbole. It's quite fascinating.
But crime has a context, and we must not shy away from it. I've said before that there is a major problem in our society with children growing up not knowing the difference between right and wrong. This is not about poverty, it is about culture. A culture that glorifies violence, that shows disrespect to authority, and that says everything about rights, but nothing about responsibilities.
Whoa, hang on. Something's wrong here. It's all about rights and not caring about responsibilities. What's that got to do with the people in the housing estates? That's got nothing to do with the people in the housing estates. He's conflated something there. The concern about rights is people, is groups, civil liberties groups, Amnesty International, you know, international organizations of humanitarian and NGOs are concerned about rights. This is outrageous what he just said. It's totally wrong.
Can I just jump in there? I think I agree about rights and responsibilities. I think Josh and I share a libertarian attitude about, you know, taking responsibility for your own actions. But what the problem is that these young people have been raised in socialism.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got this massive welfare state that is basically allowing. And I don't see anything like I'm all for helping the poor, and this is where I get pulled up all the time. Oh, you hate the poor people. This is ridiculous. I mean, my mum grew up extremely along the poverty line, and my mum trying to help out. And so all I'm saying is we cannot have a monopoly on helping the poor, and that's what the state has by giving this constant free money out to people without any real sort of help. Whereas if you have competing agencies or actually trying to help people to find a job because it's privately run, so they don't want people on their books forever, they'll be trying to get them out by finding them good jobs. Instead, you have these sort of clunky systems of helping the poor, which just end up with people just rorting the system and trying to get around it and really... So basically you're robbing the productive class to give to people that really, some people definitely need it. Some people are incapable of working and they definitely need help. But a lot of people don't.
It creates an army of useless idiots ready to, I'm getting a bit of cross chat. So you go ahead, Josh.
Sorry, you're getting echo, are you?
Oh no, it's tricky. It cuts in and out a bit.
Go ahead with what you're saying.
You sponsor these people to sit and do nothing, and then this multi-generational. And then when the bankers manipulate the system and it's getting too expensive and there are no jobs and then the government shuts down the youth centres, and it's a tinderbox ready to go. But I posit that social engineers know how it goes, and they use crises. They manipulate events and create crises. You know, like Hillary Clinton has said it, and Rahm Emanuel have said it. They said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And you think, hey, it's the same thing here, but you think this is like hitting the jackpot. They've just gone to town with all these, things that they're ramming through, and you think, magically they've got these reams of legislation ready to go, ready to enact. Did they just do that in 2 days? I don't think so. They've taken time to create this stuff.
And they've taken all the powers away from people through businesses. I mean, he mentioned that they're slightly to protect themselves. They're not even allowed to put up, proper boarding to protect their own businesses because of ridiculous regulation.
Well, they're not allowed to use weapons against anyone. So anyone who tries to defend themselves against one of these attackers with force will actually be prosecuted as well.
Yeah, we'll go down as manslaughter. The boundary laws and all these laws that basically stop you from bordering up your shop properly to sort of protect it. I mean, it's absurd.
We'll just continue the audio a bit more, see if there's anything else that he says that's worth listening to.
In too many cases, the parents of these children, if they're still around, don't care where their children are or who they're with, let alone what they are doing. The potential consequences of neglect and immorality...
Yeah, please continue.
You know, what? Where's the proof for that?
Well, he's just blaming someone. He's just laying blame there. He's saying the parents of these children are bad. As I was saying before, it's medieval. Like, there's no... There's no social construct here that he's... It's just primitive and barbaric the way this man's talking.
Well, it's almost like blaming... you blame God for when there's a big storm, or you blame...
Well, maybe the devil got into these people,
That's right. They were taken over by the devil. And I mean... Look, for a lot of instances of bad people, I definitely blame the parents, absolutely. For most children that have run amok, you definitely have to look at the parents. But if we're looking at the parents, the nanny state is effectively a parent.
Very good point. Excellent point.
Yeah, can I chime in on that point? It is exactly the point, Josh. It is the creation of the nanny state, and the state. Socialism from its creation. There are main planks that need. Getting rid of the family is one of the planks of the socialist agenda, and the state becomes the family. That is the essence of communism. That's where they're going to. And having 50% of the black children. Sorry.
We're hearing you loud and clear. Please keep talking.
Yeah, little interjections. I just hear it as a blip, 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 blip.
I think it's just audio static. So yeah, keep going.
Okay. So what I was saying that these poor kids, they've been on welfare for a long time, and they've been lulled into this idea that they're going to suck off the milk teat of the state. And they've been allowed to, they've been generationally lulled into that idea. And now the state comes around and says, well, ho, look at you, you're not taking responsibility. Well, bloody hell, they've been on the teeth for all these years. You can't have it both ways, If you want to create a state, the power of the state to be the family and to give out the money here and to feed the poor here. And I don't want to come across as I'm not uncaring. The state has engineered this situation, and you have these family breakups. And funding of single mothers. It's incentivized. That's the last point, the most important point. So many single parents and mothers. The father lives away and is not there. It's incentivized financially. This is social engineering. It doesn't come around by accident. So you go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, we have a system where the entity of a group of people, which is an abstraction called the state, is allowed to steal, take that cash and give it out to people who they think need it. Now, I'm all for helping the poor. Like I was saying before, and I'm sure you are too, and I'm sure you are, Harold, anyone that's listening to the show, I'm sure that everyone has given to charity before. And if you have given to charity, you will see the fact that charity will exist if the state does not take responsibility for the poor. Then the people of communities tend to take responsibility for poor. I know that I've given money to the homeless, and I know pretty much every one of my friends has. But what happens is the more and more that the state monopolizes these characteristics, the more and more people are not willing to help the poor personally, on a personal level, because they're saying, well, they already get all this money and they already, take all my taxes. I work and I pay 50% of my taxes to give to these people and la, 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 la. And then you get what's happening now is this sort of boredom, because people can just they're poor, and they're B, they're usually working in the black markets, which are basically, a lot of drugs and black markets have to, because there's no laws or systems of arbitrating confrontations or broken contracts, they have to be arbitrated through violence. So black markets have to be arbitrated through violence because there is no legal way of dealing with contracts. So what do you do when everyone's grown up with these violent ways of interacting with each other in a business sense, in a market sense? To deal in a market where someone's not paying up, you fire up violently. Then what happens? Well, everyone's in this culture of violence, and when it explodes, when you get a kid getting shot or something happens, and a lot of bored teenagers that have got their youth centers taken away and just want to rob and steal flat screen TVs and beat each other up. And you see it all the time where someone just goes over and clocks some drunk guy in the head.
The solution is quite clear, Josh. We just got to impose morality, Just shut up and just, learn to do as you're told.
Yeah, it's incredible. Sorry, yeah. Chris.
I want to talk about education and rights and responsibilities in education, and also the culture of the psychology of education and where we've come from. I'm reading a good book at the moment. It's called Questionable Behavior, and it talks about behaviorism and moral agency and how psychological principles have been stripping moral agency out of behavior. I mean,
oh, that's an incredibly important thing.
Interacting just from society, they don't have any. They're just bouncing around in this society, and they don't have any direct, you know, direction of what they're doing and control of their own actions. But I mean, like people do have control over their own actions, and they should know about personal responsibility. But that is actually not taught in schools anymore. You know, we've got this Skinner. B.F. Skinner was a psychiatrist or behaviorist, and he basically said that you can put any effect on a child to make them do anything at all. You know, they've got stimulus and they've got a response.
Didn't he conduct experiments on his own daughter?
Yeah, and mostly rats and pigeons, but...
Yes.
But it's called conditioning, you know.
Mostly rats and pigeons, but also on his daughter.
Yeah. You create the conditions and people behave in a certain way. And this is removing the moral agency out of humanity. And but this B.F. Skinner was the official psychological profile of the Soviet Union. That's their guru of education in the Soviet Union, and also in the American and Western education in the 60s and 70s, and even now. You know, it's the carrot and the stick method of treating kids. You know, you reward and punishment, and they don't learn to do things socially responsible and to take responsibility for their own actions. And it is a problem, but I mean, it's not the right time right now when it's suddenly exploded after 40 years of bad educational practice to blame the parents or the children for not being morally responsible. It's 40 years of cultural morass and degradation through this dodgy education system.
Indeed. Let me just play the last couple of minutes of this. Just stand by. I want you to keep talking about that, but I just want to play a little more.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Chris.
With, let alone what they are doing. The potential consequences of neglect and immorality on this scale have been clear for too long, without enough action being taken. As I said yesterday, there is no one step that can be taken, but we need a benefit system that rewards work and is on the side of families. We need more discipline in our schools. We need action to deal with the most disruptive families, and we need a criminal justice system that scores a clear and heavy line between right and wrong. In short, all action necessary to help mend our broken society. At the heart of all the violence sits the issue of street gangs. Territorial, hierarchical, and incredibly violent, they are mostly composed of young boys, mainly from dysfunctional homes. They earn money through crime, particularly drugs, and are bound together by an imposed loyalty to an authoritarian gang leader. They have blighted life on their estates with gang-on-gang murders and unprovoked attacks on innocent bystanders. In the last few days, there is some evidence that they've been behind the coordination of the attacks on the police and the looting that has followed. I want us to use the record of success against gangs from cities like Boston in the USA, and indeed from the Strathclyde police in Scotland, who've done this by engaging the police, the voluntary sector and local government. And I want this to be a national priority. We've already introduced gang injunctions, and I can announce today we're going to use them across the whole country for children and for adults. There are also further sanctions available beyond the criminal justice system. Local authorities and landlords already have tough powers to evict the perpetrators from social housing. Some local authorities...
All right, look, that's enough. I mean,
the government is a gang. Some would say the police are a gang.
How do you identify a gang member? We've had this same discussion in Australia, and it's just ludicrous. And it leads to persecution. It leads to ridiculous situations where someone, because they've got a certain tattoo on their arm, can't walk into a pub. I mean, it's just, again, everything he's saying is about we're going to apply sanctions. And he says we're going to try and mend our broken... He starts by saying we're going to try and mend our broken society. Good. But then, what's the solution? Apply sanctions. No, well, that's not how you mend a broken society.
The only thing governments can do, and the only thing they're really set up for, is for violence, to passing new laws which are enforced by violence. They're not there to sort of... be nice. Even when they're doing nice things like giving money out, they're taking the money from somewhere violently.
Well, with taxes. Yeah,
it's really it's a very, very hard game. To bring the word morality into a discussion about how to fix the government is It's impossible, philosophically.
Look, we're just about running out of time. Chris, is there any summary points you want to make as we go out?
Yeah, I mean, this is a virtual buffet of tyranny. You know, he's presenting it there. He's got the mandate. He's got the backing, and he's it's a buffet of. You know, he's grabbing all. He's loaded his plate mile high. You know, he's gonna sit down there and shove it down his throat and our throats. You know, it's outrageous. The sort of he's gone. It's a massive grab. Sorry, I'm a bit speechless. Go ahead.
And like a normal buffet, you see these really fat, greedy people just loading up the plate, not even eating at all, just leaving the rest there. So he'll just grab all these laws that they won't even use yet, but they'll just be there, ready to slap onto people's faces.
And another point is that the premeditation and the planning, you know, the cops were watching and waiting for 3 days, and now there's this outrage, and suddenly they've got all this legislation on the table ready to go. It's a bit too coincidental, I think.
It is indeed. Look, we're going to have to leave it at that. It's been great having you on, Crispy, and
Thanks
we'll do it again
me.
Soon.
Good to
and just hope that we can make a small difference by our discussion. So that's it from Truth News Radio Australia for another week.
Good on you, mate. See you later, folks. Thanks, Christy.